What happened to... What was it like living... what was it like sleeping in a hammock for the first
time? I enjoyed it. I loved hammocks. I would sleep in one now if I had a chance. I think they're... Once you're used to them, they're quite comfortable, I think. But you know, if you know how to handle them, you could. You add the blankets, the paddies and the bottom, judge blankets, you lay them over the end of the hammock. If you want to kind of keep your hammock up, you can always lace up your toys, you know, they tie part. And you lay in the hammock, and over the sort of angle of both sides, you lift your feet up to see, and then it falls in round you. It will wrap in blankets. One's moving about, and this one is full of this.
Frank Sherriston, Reel 2. Can you remember anything else about mess life? What did you do in your spare time in the mess?
Mostly reading. I didn't have cars. I mean, I was born there. And there, well, so I used to go on the upper deck, walk around. And he used to have a cinema. He used to go to the cinema. Things like that, and listen to the music, radio was on all the time, and then you listen to that. But actually, other than that, I didn't do it quite a deal, because most of the time, especially at sea, you don't have much time to do anything else, because you're on watch, weren't you, from daylight to dark, more or less. You had this, you're watching the early hours of the morning, and you had the afternoon watch, which means to say you get an extra 2 hours. Put it on a skip watches, and then you went on to the third watch, usually from 8 to 12.
How did you adjust living on according to a watch system? How did you get, enough sleep? Did you find you could adjust?
Oh yeah, well, I get tired enough to go to sleep early, I think, anyway. I wasn't never bad at sleeping, you know, I always get a good night's sleep, always. And I'm sure he's picked me out, and so it didn't matter very good. And then running up and down the ladders, you know, because only the 3 decks down, you see, got a lot of ladders to walk up to get to the top there. Anyway, in the stoker, and then up the other ladders going downwards. You had to go down quite a way.
How many decks down was your work station from your mess?
Two decks.
Tell me about your work. What did that involve?
Well, see, I was lucky in that sense. I met a seaman in Bournemouth, come from Bournemouth. Name is Doug Lake. Doug was working in a chippy shop. So how'd you get out there? I said. I said, I wanted to be a corner as a chippy. I said, but he wouldn't accept me. They fell up, they said. So, he said, one of the chiefs up there is another Bournemouth chap. He said, I'll go work with him. So, he said, I said, right. Anyway, he came the next day, he came back here, line up the chippy shop. He said, and next day you turn off, go up the chippy shop. He said, and see, oh, I forget his name, come from Bournemouth. But he's a naval, real naval chippy, you see. So I went up there and I said, I'm the chippy, okay. Can you get into this as a chippy? I said, he wouldn't accept me. He said, what would you do as a trader? I said, well, of course, you can't get in. I said, no, they didn't want me. But at that time they didn't. Anyway, I see the chief ship, right? Warrant ship, right? That's a little bit higher, see? And he said, see, if you can get a trade test up here, and come and work in this chippy shop during the day, your day during the work, see? So I said, yeah, I'll be fine. So anyway, I went up there, and he said, yeah, he said, I'll see that. He took me to the warrant ship, right? So I told the warrant ship, right? They'll give you all a chance to have a trade test. So I went and had a trade test on board a KD-5, which is unusual, but you generally had to go to public barracks or somewhere to get that. Anyway, I passed a trade test. So as the year months went by, well, this is going after Bismarck there, and as the months went by, I got a call from the Pompey. At a certain time, I was being made up to a joiner. So it's like, well, it says on the paper when it was, you know. And anyway, that's what happened. In that sphere of life, got a bit complicated.
So you eventually became a joiner.
Yeah.
But when you initially joined the KG5,
I was a stoker.
You were a stoker. Can you tell me about that first of all? What did your work as a stoker involve?
Well, I was allocated to, which I'm thankful for, to the engine room. In the engine room, first of all, I was down on the net or deck down again. I had to go around every 10 minutes to watch the oil what was being going through the to the cover blocks and all the other things, you see. And so that if you was left for so many minutes, it all seize up, you see, on it jammed up. So you had to be wide awake for 4 hours down there watching all these things all the way around to go around the engine room. Well, turn the engine room, you're down in the below the engine room. And that's what I did.
Did you have any little tricks to keep yourself awake?
Yeah. I started smoking one of them. And eating. Well, I started with chocolate. I used to eat lots of chocolate. And don't forget, the engine room, boom, boom, boom. And so if you sat down, because you really never sit down, you see, and it soon turned me off to sleep. Especially if you've been up nearly all night as well. And so I used to buy a lot of chocolate and eat, and I started putting on weight, which wasn't very good for me. So I sat there and I started smoking. So when they had the next ration issue of tobacco, I went and bought myself a pound of leaf tobacco. And I knew one of the chaps who you smoked leaf tobacco, you see, and he used to make his own. Well, he rolled up, have you seen them? Rolled up the pricks of tobacco, what they used to call. Done up a spun yarn. And I used to always start making my own tobacco, which I squeezed and put the rope, you know, the spun yarn that you put round them. And I used to sit on that, they were tighten the string. And anyway, I was starting to look at these tobacco. Bought myself a pipe, and that's how we could smoke down there, which we were allowed to do.
Who else was in the engine room with you?
At that time, there was one other stoker up above, and the chief's stoker, and a chief stoker. And they were up on the deck, the next deck up. I was down there on my own. So you end up with your kit, your weight, you think. And you had to just go around because it was 10 days sales if anything went wrong.
Who did you get your orders from?
In the engine room?
Yeah.
The chief down there. Sometimes there was an officer come down, not very often. Only time he was really down there was when he was in action stations. He reckoned he had a revolver, but he'd never get it up with him. And as you panic, they'd shoot you probably. They won't tell you that, but that's what they reckon they would do, you see. Because of the long way up and the big armor latch over the top of you, which would have a change and that would pull up and down if it wasn't working with the automatic. And there was 9 inches thick of the armor plate and deck, hatch was. So When you shut down, then you were shut down. One way, no way up. When I asked you if the place was in rapid and pumping in action stages, I was on the rapid and pumping stations, which would flood the ship out, you know, or put the fires out or something like that. You know.
How did that work? Was that a mobile pump?
No. Well, it opened valves. I should try to remember what valves there were about. 5 or 6 valves, so you wouldn't ever remember which ones they were, you know. Don't ask me what they are now. It was a long time ago.
Can you tell me about... excuse me. Can you tell me about the role of the KG-5? Where were you sent whilst you were on board her?
Well... I visited Iceland. In Iceland, I met the American Navy, and that's where I had my first ice cream from that factory. Because we were allowed to go, we were invited on board and everything. And this was up in Iceland. I forget the name of the fjord. It was down for the fjords, and down there was the army and pioneers, of course, you know, you're still all putting up the huts and that for people so that are happy to live in. They're staying on the fjords from half an hour's run from Reykjavik, which I went to. I had a trip up to Reykjavik and walked around the town, but we weren't very happy. We weren't invited very much up there. They didn't like it very much. And,
what sort of duties was the King George V involved in?
Well, they were there originally, but as you know, the Prince of Wales, the other, well, I like the KG-7, the KG-5, she went out when the hood went out, and she got...
Sorry, it's your foot again against the table.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And
so you went out?
Yeah.
At the same time as the hood or after the hood?
After the hood. The hood, my Prince of Wales went out with the hood and she got smashed up a bit.
Where were you when you heard?
We were back in Scapa Flow then.
Can you remember hearing that news?
Yes. And they broadcasted over there that the hood had been sunk. Well, actually, we were on our way out. And we heard that there would have been a sun. From then on, we were sort of trying to chase her around, shadow her.
Were you at your action stations then?
Yeah, not all the time, yes. On and off, just spells. Sometimes you didn't even go to get down to the bathroom. Yeah. And I don't remember, we used to get. When they say, when you were closed up, they call closed up for action stations, all you could get was a cup of coffee and something like that, and not coffee, chocolate, you made with chips chocolate, you know. And here's a drink of that. And some biscuits, naval biscuits.
What was the mood like on board when you were chasing the Bismarck?
The what?
What was the atmosphere like on board?
All right, nobody seemed to bother you too great deal. At the actual station, when they started opening fire, I'll tell you about this, because it sticks in my memory. I was sound asleep by my action station, rapid and flood pumping station. I'd just come up from the engine room. And I was down there at night, because we used to sleep on where we were supposed to be. And so I was sound asleep, because I was tired. And the first thing I knew was when they opened fire, the first salvo, and woke me up. And the skipper said, started to talk about it. He'd give a running commentary on the action, actually. But he said, "Do you hear the skipper?" I said, "No, I know nothing." And the skipper had given a talk, on it all, but I didn't think about that because I didn't hear it. So nobody ever looked up and said, you know, I'll tell you what the story is. So I don't know what it is, said, you know.
So you were
bored?
No. You were woken up by the...
The gunfire.
The gunfire. What was that like?
Oh, did it shake everything? Yes, it did. Because there was only one deck below the... And sort of a ship that vibrate. And there's lots and lots of this fittings come down and all that around the ship, you know. Like pants and all that, you know. So that's actually the officer's quarters, which she didn't mind about. yeah, that like collapsed. Anyway, I'll tell you, I vaguely relate that the 45 guns, which were pumping about, I don't know how many, 500 and some odd shells they fire a minute. Not a minute, you know, each 45 fired. So the upper deck was littered in shell cases. But the guns, the big guns, you know, well, of course, they were swiveled round, and they swiveled round, and that sort of drove the ship over sideways on it. But the others would just keep pumping out shells by left and centre. Of course, there was a Ramilly there, and the illustrious, and all sorts of boats there that time. Because, you know, we lost her, didn't they? Or can you remember? They lost her coming down between Ireland and England. And lost her in the fog. I'll tell you a bit about the fog, shall I? I wanted to come back from Iceland after chasing her around, finding out where she is. A very thick fog came down, very thick, and we couldn't see. You couldn't see the bows of the ship. Okay? And we were all told to stay quiet. Everything had to go shut down, quiet. And then we had to shout and listen. And if we heard anything come back from any, because the lustrous was there with us, and we'd lost her. You see, in the fog. And
I'm
not going to put recording.
No, it's fine.
And we sort of had to listen then quietly if we could hear any from the other ships. Never heard anything. We'd lost them all completely. Anyway, it cleared eventually, and we found they couldn't broadcast, you see. You wouldn't allow to broadcast anything because they see there's not a big duck or any of that, and there was anything. So everything had to be remain quiet. Anyway, after that, we ended up that we eventually found her down on the tip of Ireland, and where the aircraft went over and knocked her steering gear out. She was going around in circles. So she, in a sense, she was sitting duck. And the Ramleys then, who were one or two other big boats were there. And that one with the chap at Dorchester, he was on one of the other boats. And he had something to do with the Naval Association at Dorchester. And he went, I don't know him. You've never seen it.
To continue the story of the Bismarck, can you remember how that finished, as far as you were concerned?
Well, we were all... The naval action had stopped. No more firing, no guns firing, or anything. So we were all invited up onto the deck to see it. So they were invited up in watches. But you got up there and Mom said, up to you when you went down again. I said, oh, I know where to go near the rapid and pumping stations. And so I stayed up there a little bit longer and perhaps I should have done. Anyway, I stayed up there and All I could see was a gun hanging over the side, and smashed, everything was seemed to be smashed to smithereens. And I did see several ratings from the ship diving overboard. But we kind of went quite close to her, not quite close, and then I see them jumping overboard. And they were rescued, a lot of them, but they didn't stay there very long. The rest of them, they heard that there were some marines on the way, you know, U-boats. So, and they all turned tail in the end, and didn't pick up a lot of them. A lot of them was killed and drowned, must have been. Anyway, but the few that was picked up, I met one or two of them at the naval thing. And I shook hands with one of them.
Anything else you remember about the crippled Bismarck?
No. From there from the Bismarck, we nearly run out of fuel. Diesel. No, big pardon, not diesel. Fuel raw, you know what they, for the fires. And that we had to go back on diesel, a lot of diesel fuel to get to Lockheary in Scotland. And we pulled in and refueled at Lockheary in Scotland. And that is all that I know about it. We didn't very much of it.
When you saw the Bismarck in its disabled state, was it on fire?
Yes, fire's burning. And that, like that, but she's a complete wreck. Well, I could see her. So I never had glasses, mind to look at it. But they, obviously, we just fancy you had to look out over water a fair distance. But you could see, in a massive great ship, you could, anything that's down on deck, the superstructure was all blown apart and everything like that. Because the Romanese had a 16-inch. I think they were underneath, and the Rodney, they had 16-inch guns, you see, big as the Bismarck. And so they smashed it up a bit. We were only 13 points on the other guns, you know.
In addition to what you could see, could you smell anything, like burning or oil or anything like that?
Nothing like that. We're too far away for that. I went out, we had paint. Going from there, I don't really remember. I'll take this bit by bit, not straightforward. But we came over from Newfoundland, I went short Newfoundland, Nova Scotia. It's Halifax, Nova Scotia. And we brought back about 40 ships, the escort, 40 ships from Nova Scotia. And a lot of those were sunk. By the time we got back to Scotland, you could see them burning off the Abbots, U-boat or something, you know. You should think of poor sods out there, you know. And they're getting sunk.
After the Bismarck had been sunk, what was the atmosphere aboard the KG-5? Was it one of jubilation or celebration?
Yeah, they felt, you think, oh, it's one out the way. Obviously, then in war days like that, you're always glad to see the enemy sunk and gone. See, there's no pity, is there, at war?
Well, what was the reaction of the sailors who were looking at the Bismarck when you were on deck?
I think they must have seen what I felt, you know, good job, that's out the way. Things out the way. Mine, she was a lovely ship, but I hand it to the Germans, they built a lovely ship. They were different than ours. Do you want me to tell you about the difference? The mess decks we were on, mess decks, they were all watertight. And so if you put a shell on the side of her, all the mess decks around her were all airtight, more or less, and they'd keep the thing afloat, you see. So that's one advantage of German there. Mind that, see, when they come into harbour, refuel, or anything like that, they didn't live aboard. And nobody lived aboard the ships there because they had no mess decks. Like we had hammocks and things to live in. They all touch down wherever they could, I suppose, or when they were sea, I don't know. But I know that she took a lot of sinking. Very tricky.
After that incident, sinking with Bismarck, what did the King George do, King George V do after that?
Well, I'll come back to Scapa Flow then. So Scapa Flow. Yeah, we went up to Oyston then. Come back, went up to Oyston. And I went around Bear Island. I went up around Bear Island because there was convoys and that keep going up there. So we went up there in Scarlet Rack. But the Shire Horse and a few more of them was still around in the little mill boat. Like what's the name of the gate?
Tirpitz.
Tirpitz. Yeah, that was up in the. Iceland, in Norway. That's right, Norway. I was in one of the fjords up there. Because she was being bombed. And so she was a bit disabled and couldn't come out. But they were always afraid that she would come out. See, so there was always somebody on guard, a ship of some sort or other, to see that she didn't come out. And there was Princess Eugene and several more boats down there. But you were up with one of the fjords, they were pinned in more or less. So hopefully they didn't come out. Because we pinned two of them down in Olaf Breast. At one time we were serving up down the French coast, off of Breast. Yeah. there was two of them in there, two German pocket battleships in there. So we used to patrol up and down there and make sure they didn't come out. What else you want now?
Oh, well, we've talked a little bit about the convoy duties.
Yeah, I can't play it, yeah.
Any other particular tasks that you remember the George V being involved in?
Well, when we were on our way down, you know when the extra one down in South America? Was it called out? I can't remember, my brains are getting a little bit out of that as it is.
The Grass Bay?
Grass Bay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were actually better than me. Well, they sunk the Grass Bay or drove her in there, but we were on our way down, but she was still at sea and they were firing at the Exeter and all those that was down there. So we were on our way down there, but then she was driven into the the bay there. Montevideo Bay, wasn't it?
Montevideo, yeah.
Yeah. And then so we turned around and come back in. It was the first time I was issued with a tropical pair. So we got that hand it all back between, you know, because we were mostly up around the frozen place, you know. Cold, it was cold up there.
What was it like dealing with the cold climate? Did that affect you?
Oh, yeah. Well, the ship was kept fairly warm, but the guns were always having a hot air pump through them to keep them from freezing up. Else they get froze up and then exploded. What if they drove a fire shell? But upon deck, don't touch anything, no metal, because you freeze your hands to it. So we cut down to much of the week where we cut down where it was warmer, but it was still cold air what they pumped through, you know, because they've got a lot of air going through the ship, keep it a bit smelling, a bit decent. And it was a bit cold night times. I'm very warm on the mess decks, you know. And then you get sort of slowly get used to it, and you put another layer of clothes under it. What else could you you'll have to prompt me now.
I will, of course. How long were you on board the George the V?
About a year. Yeah. I got a medal, says I was in the Atlantic Star. And to have the Atlantic Star, you had to be in the Atlantic for a year. Did you know that? Yeah. And it's about one of the second times from one of the most because if you I suppose all I looked at it since then, I said, well, I suppose by living a year in with all them new boats, they were lucky.